Our next case this morning is file number A21-0044. Case is the State of Minnesota versus Kenneth Hamilton. As all parties are aware, appellant's counsel will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent's counsel 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This matter is being recorded in an audio fashion. However, court rules prohibit any attorneys or guests or anyone watching this from doing their own recording, either audio or video. So please comply with those rules. Whenever you're ready, counsel for the appellant, you may begin. Please just tell us your voice, your name in a loud, clear voice. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Mr. Olson, my name is Luke Heck, and I have the pleasure of representing Mr. Hamilton on this appeal. It's a frankly fairly straightforward reasonable suspicion issue in this case. The prime discrepancy here is that there's a squad car video that was admitted into the record at Mr. Hamilton's contested omnibus hearing that, depending on who you ask, from Mr. Hamilton's perspective, clearly evidences that there was no traffic violation that occurred to warrant the seizure of his vehicle at that point. Deputy Haber at the contested omnibus hearing testified that, and to be fair, subsequently tried to backtrack a little bit in the testimony, but testified that the traffic violations he observed and the driving conduct that he observed would be on the squad car video that was admitted into evidence. The squad car video, at least from Mr. Hamilton's perspective in multiple reviews, doesn't amount to any crossing or touching of fog lines or center lines to support a basis for the stop. And as a result, I guess, frankly, if the court were to review the video and believe it supported Mr. Hamilton's contentions, we'd ask for a reversal. And otherwise, if the court disagrees with it, then it would be an affirmation.
You know, Mr. Heck, I'd like to try a different view. And I understand the issue in terms of the conflict between, you know, what was on the video, what the officer said he saw, you know, the fog lines. But, you know, in your own brief on page 4, you state, in Minnesota, observing a motor vehicle weaving within its own lane in an erratic manner can justify an officer stopping a driver. I mean, isn't there uncontested evidence that that happened? So therefore, if it did, isn't that enough for a stop? And the panel doesn't even have to get into this huge debate about the video and the officer and then that statement that the court made, more likely than not, which, you know, I was a little nervous about. But so why can't we just sustain this stop on that basis alone?
Well, and thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.
Well, because there wasn't any jerking or weaving either, as evidenced on the squad car video, as well as...
I don't think there has to be jerking. I think there has to be weaving within its lane. And you know, whether I think that's right or wrong, I mean, that's the law. So isn't there evidence of that?
I believe that it would be a clearly erroneous finding that there would be, based on the testimony and the squad car video evidence, that there was weaving within its lane to justify the stop. I think separate and distinct from any crossing or touching of fog lines. At least it's Mr. Hamilton's position, and reasonable minds could disagree, but that I don't believe that the record supports, based on the video as well, that there was weaving within the lane to justify.
So I just want to make sure, are you saying that, just to make sure I understand, you're saying there was no weaving at all, or are you saying that there was weaving, that there was weaving, but it wasn't in an erratic manner?
That there was weaving and it wasn't an erratic manner. It wasn't, and what I mean by that, I guess to flesh it out a little bit, is that there was slight variances, you know, in direction from one side to the other by Mr. Hamilton's vehicle, and I understand we're going second by second in what a 10-20 second video clip where it happens quickly, but there's some drifting, for lack of a better term, but not sharp weaving. There's not sharp drifting or erratic weaves that, you know, from one part of that lane of the road to the other part of that same lane. There isn't those sharp differentiations present here. If anything, I would acknowledge that there's some, for lack of a better term, drifting that was present, but nothing that would be erratic or weaving to warrant a traffic stop. And thank you for allowing me to clarify that. And in that same vein, the final point, I guess, that was raised on appeal by the state as well as in the district court's decision is outlined, and I want to make sure I have it up so I don't misquote the finding by the court or the conclusion by the court. However, the court notes, Judge Benson notes in her analysis that given the location of the stop, the time of night, and the condition of the road, a reasonable officer who observed this driving conduct would have an objective basis for concluding the defendant was driving after having consumed alcohol, which is at the appendix at or addendum at number 4. Again, we don't believe that the record supports in the totality, and even under those circumstances, that would amount to reasonable suspicion based on the time of night, the location. I believe there's some testimony that there were bars in the area there, such as Zorba's. We don't believe that testimony either supports in the totality reasonable suspicion to believe that Mr. Hamilton was driving while impaired, which it appears the court was, in its conclusion, was alluding to based on him driving after having consumed alcohol. It's a speculatory statement, you know, after the fact. Of course, we know that he consumed alcohol because there was a breath test that occurred far after the stop that established that. But it's gleaning from testimony that, oh, there's bars out there and the time of night it would support that there was someone leaving a bar. And I don't think that separate and distinct or coupled with the driving conduct testified to and what the squad car video shows supports that either. And for all those reasons, I understand that there's quite a bit of time left on here, but for those reasons, we would ask that you reverse it because we don't believe the squad car video supports any of those contentions and coupled with any testimony that would reflect it. It doesn't rise to reasonable suspicion. I would field any other questions.
So counsel, let me just follow up with one question, and I might have just missed your point. So I apologize if I'm making you repeat something. I understand that you say the video doesn't show weaving, at least not in the way you would define weaving, because it's not significant enough. And you definitely say it doesn't support crossing of lines or jerking, so erratic driving. But the officer did testify to that, right? It is?
Correct.
And so the district court certainly could have chosen to credit the officer's testimony and just said, it's a poor quality video, which I think is also commented on by the district, the poor quality video. Yeah. So now the district court didn't say it that way, did not say that she was crediting the officer's testimony over the video. But, you know, I guess I need to understand your answer to that hypothetical question. If the district court had said, you know, poor quality video, I'm going to credit the officer's testimony. He saw what he saw. And on that basis, objective, reasonable suspicion. So what's wrong with that?
Well, what I would in part be relying on there in response is I understand it's an unpublished decision, but in State v. Britton in 2019, this court had addressed at least part the balancing and consideration of testimony regarding furtive movements from the officer compared to what was observed on the squad car video there. In that case, which again, just to reiterate, was unpublished, but it's still certainly persuasive here. The court found it was clearly erroneous to credit the testimony over the squad car video that was present there that did not reflect any furtive movement. So if in that hypothetical that judge you presented, I believe that it would be inappropriate based off of at least the findings and conclusions in Britton as well to support crediting the testimony over the video, regardless of the quality. I mean, I understand that some quality would be almost have no evidentiary value. That isn't the case here. I mean, you can see things on the video. It's not as though it's just completely shot and of the poorest quality, where in this scenario, I believe that it would been inappropriate and clearly erroneous, or that this court should find, and based on the conclusions that were made, understanding it wasn't per se what the question was asked, but that in here that the video outweighs the should be considered above and beyond the testimony based on the finding or conclusion in Britton on that subject matter. Thank you. Sorry, I was rambling, but
no, thank you.
Other than that, if there's any other questions, otherwise I would forego any, at least this direct time. Thank you.
I don't think there are, so thank you very much, Mr. Heck. You will have rebuttal. We'll now hear from counsel from the respondent, please.
Good morning. May it please the court and Mr. Heck, my name is Ben Olson. I'm an assistant Otter Tail County attorney. I'm representing the state, the respondent. I think the most important thing to remember in deciding this case is the standard of review that applies. The district court's decision rests almost entirely on two findings of fact, either that Mr. Hamilton committed a traffic violation that the deputy observed directly, or that he weaved within his lane in an erratic manner, and that in and of itself supported the stop. And to succeed on this appeal, Mr. Hamilton has to demonstrate that both of those findings are clearly erroneous, and it's our position that he cannot meet that burden. And I think that's clear when you look to the video evidence that we're talking about. Mr. Hamilton's claim depends on his assertion that the video directly contradicts the deputy's testimony. But as the court has already picked up, and as the district court commented on, at first glance, you can tell that the video is of poor quality. When you look closer, you see a number of things. And I went in this in much more detail in my brief, because you really do have to look close. The state doesn't assert that this is the, you know, craziest driving conduct that's ever been recorded by an officer, but you can clearly see drifting in a lane to a concerning extent. Right when Deputy Haber calls out, you know, Mr. Hamilton crossed the center line, you can see that Mr. Hamilton's vehicle is traveling up a hill and that the deputy's headlights don't illuminate the center line. The center line's dashed in that area, and it's really impossible one way or another to tell from the video, given its quality, whether at that exact moment Mr. Hamilton was on the line, over it, or just very near it. But if you focus on the rear wheels of Mr. Hamilton's vehicle and the distance that they are from the lines that we're talking about, you can tell the vehicle's moving side to side quite clearly. The distance between Mr. Hamilton's passenger tires and the white fog line on the right is at its greatest at basically the exact moment Deputy Hamilton or Deputy Haber testifies or calls out on that video that he's crossing the center line. The exact opposite is true. The driver's side tires are at their greatest distance from the center line at the moment that Deputy Haber calls out that he's crossing the fog line. All that is to say that while the video evidence may not directly and conclusively support the deputy's testimony, you can't say that it directly contradicts it. The best you can say is that it supports it, at least in some manner. And I think that's important. The court has already alluded to, well, why don't we focus just on weaving, because that's the easier question to answer. We don't necessarily need to decide that Mr. Hamilton was on the center line or the fog line at any point during the video that we've all seen. And that's a smart way to analyze the case, given the case law that we're dealing with. I think given the arguments...
On that note, Mr. Olson, does the evidence suggest he was weaving? I mean, the court said in a suspicious matter. I mean, was he weaving in an erratic manner within his lane?
I think that question dovetails right into the case law that I was about to discuss. I cited it in my brief. It's State versus Morse, a Supreme Court case from 2016. And that case described driving conduct, weaving that supported a traffic stop, to include moving from the center of a lane towards the center line and then back to the center. So essentially one weave is how the Supreme Court described the conduct. The conduct at issue here is much more egregious than that. Mr. Hamilton can be seen drifting from the center, going very, very near or on top of arguably the center line, centers the vehicle back in the lane and then goes over center and goes very, very near the fog line. Meanwhile, brakes abruptly and then also comes back to the center of lane. So if we're looking for a definition of what weaving erratically means, I think we look to our case law for that. And I think that the Morris decision, quite frankly, the facts in that case were more favorable to Morris, the defendant, than the facts are in this case. And to be clear, it was raised in Mr. Hamilton's reply brief that the state's arguing that the time of night and the area alone establish reasonable suspicion. And that's not what the state is arguing. If that was gleanable from our argument, I apologize for that. The argument is weaving on its own is enough for a stop, but weaving plus the other factors only bolstered the reasonable suspicion that was present. So the weaving plus the time of night plus the area, which was known for its drunk driving, often patrolled by deputies, and near bars, and again in the evening. And then I think the last thing I'd like to do with my time, if there are no other questions, is discuss the Britton case that Mr. Heck has discussed today. I think that case is clearly distinguishable on the facts. In Britton, the court was analyzing an expansion of a stop based on officers' testimony that there was a furtive movement. And the concern there was that the furtive movement was not on the camera at all whatsoever. There were other concerns as well, specifically that the officer didn't testify at any point during the hearing that, you know, to the specific time when he observed the furtive movement, and he didn't claim that for any reason the furtive movement would not have been captured on the video, or that the video was so poor that you couldn't see it. Here we have different facts. We have a video that isn't great, but it does at least show the conduct. The officer during the omnibus hearing testified that he observed the traffic violation and the weaving. And on the video, there's pinpoints where the officer observed those exact things. The officer also explained that the video was poor. He testified that all of the driving conduct would have been captured by the video, which it was. We just can't see what the deputy saw. And I think that's another important point, is that the deputy testified he saw all of this much more clearly than you can see it on the video. And I think that, just from a common sense perspective, supports the district court's findings, because we all know when we're traveling behind a vehicle, we can see those tires a lot more clearly. And I think that just bolsters the district court's findings and makes it even tougher for Mr. Hamilton to demonstrate that the court's underlying findings, the driving conduct, those findings were clearly erroneous. So if there are no other questions, I would yield the rest of my time. Thank you.
I don't think there are any. Thank you very much, Mr. Olson. Mr. Heck, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just real briefly, at the end of the day, here's what the video shows. You know, it shows you can see Mr. Hamilton. You can see Mr. Hamilton's tires. You can see the center line. You can see the fog line. You can see all these things on the video. You know, it shows the driving conduct on the video. This isn't some mystery, poor quality squad car video where you aren't able to glean all of these, you know, big ticket items as it pertains to this case. It's present on there. And I don't believe that getting in the weeds on the quality of the video here is it's good enough at least to see the driving conduct, frankly, from our position or lack thereof. And as a result, I believe it's clearly erroneous based off of the video comparatively to the testimony of Officer Haber. Of course, he, you know, is of the position that he had a basis to stop Mr. Hamilton. He's the one that conducted the stop. However, I think under scrutiny, that this court would not be inappropriate to reverse this, the court's order based on the record as a whole here. And for those reasons,
Mr. Heck, if I could just real quickly, what's your response to Mr. Olson's citation, to the Morse case and deference owed to the training and experience of a police officer?
Thank you, Your Honor. In that response, and this was in our reply brief as well, I think we acknowledge as much with the Morse case and just citing different cases. For instance, in State versus Richardson from 2001, that was citing to State versus KVAM, which I assume is FLOM. Observing a motor vehicle weaving within its own lane in an erratic manner can justify a stop. I believe that Morse is piggybacking off prior precedent that would support that. And I would agree that if there was erratic weaving in on the video, whether it be based on the Morse precedent or prior Minnesota Supreme Court findings, that there would be a basis in it to a reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. Hamilton. It's our position that just that it still requires erratic weaving, not just simply weaving. There's no requirement under Minnesota law or prior precedent that a vehicle be driving straight as an arrow and only straight as an arrow within its own lane at all. It would be an unreasonable interpretation of remaining in the singular lane statute where, so as a result, I would agree that if there's erratic weaving under Morse or whatever, and I'm not trying to cherry pick the language of that particular decision, but that would support it. It's our position that just doesn't exist to that extent. Additionally, in regards to, was there a second part to that question, Your Honor? I apologize because I feel like I was rambling a little bit.
Oh, what do we do with the language in the cases about deference owed to the training and experience of law enforcement?
Oh, it's certainly a variable to be considered by the court. There's not a way to dance around that part. I don't think it's the end all be all here. Our eyes are no better than law enforcement's eyes, or no worse to that extent. Testifying to, the driving conduct was the driving conduct. And whether it's a law enforcement squad car video or the law enforcement officer's testimony on it, I don't believe that the court should differentiate or credit training and experience over the court's own eye, own six eyes in this particular case. I mean, the video is the video, and it's a great thing about them is they're objective. They don't come with any training or experience, nor do they come with any benefit or to having their decision, the basis for the stop supported or not. It is what it is. And I guess just our position that regardless of training experience or regardless of any of these other outside variables, that there's a basis to stop them. It's on that video. And we don't believe that that's on there. And that, in fact, it would be clearly erroneous, or the district court's decision was clearly erroneous in concluding that there was weaving based on the video, or understanding it was partially, mostly based on testimony. But I guess that's kind of where we stand on it. Stop rambling. Other than that, if there's no other questions, it looks like I'm about out of time. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Heck. Thank you, Mr. Olson. We appreciate your arguments. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.